Okay.
We're rolling.
Okay. Welcome back to another episode of Super BS. My name is Brian. This is
Brian.
Also Brian.
Damn it. This is how we start every single episode.
It's
get
funny
your
every time.
Freaking names right for one time.
It's funny every time the joke just never gets old.
It never gets old. Everybody says that. They love it online. We're getting constant mad likes. Everybody's
I think that we should refer. We should just use, because I don't like my name being out of the way. So maybe we should just use our like gamer tech names.
And then we also put a bag over your head so we can see you.
I would like to be called Donna from here on out.
Donna. And we're gonna face blur you, so you don't have to worry about
it. Face blur me. Just call me Donna.
Okay, Donna. What a Donna Air Client. What a. Everybody knows who he is now because there's no other person on the internet with your name. Anyways, back to games. What have you been playing, Donna?
The last.
Okay. What have you been playing?
I've been playing. I was playing Final Fantasy, you know.
Again? We already talked about that.
I'm just going through it.
A month and a half ago, man.
I don't have a PlayStation, so I can't buy Horizon. So
okay.
I've been playing.
Oh, there's a lot of games.
I've been playing what I already own. There's nothing like that's been driving me out until last night when I finally had time to go buy Halo Wars 2.
Which is what?
Which is fantastic.
Maybe Sony will buy us PlayStation.
This is true.
According to the internet,
Sony, we love you.
Sony, the most customer-friendly company. They always have their gamers first. They never make any decisions that are to their benefit and the detriment of others. So maybe you'll see this and buy us PlayStations.
Sony, we have 15 downloads. Okay, we're climbing to the top pretty quick.
I will play my PlayStation 4. I will play my PlayStation 4, Josh.
I will play it if it's free.
And we'll also take copies of Tales of Berseria, because we told you how much we love that game. We all want a copy of that.
Tales of Bresteria.
Tales of Broseria.
That was actually the title of the first episode, if you did not catch that.
Because we love Tales games here.
We love
the Pro Tales podcast. Anyways, about Halo Wars 2.
Halo Wars 2.
Speaking of Tales, okay.
We'll talk some more about Tales.
Story. Okay. I bought Halo Wars 2, took it home, undressed it, its wrappings, you know.
Oh,
kind of
yeah.
Talk dirty to it a little bit, put it in my Xbox.
We need a button that just goes,
yes.
Oh
yeah. Waited 2 hours for it to install, and then I played it. And this Halo Wars 2, so did you ever play the first one?
Yeah, I played it. Did you get a chance
to play it? Yeah, I played the first one.
So it was fun, but it kind of felt like people were questioning it. It kind of felt like they didn't know what they were doing at first. It's kind of like, we're taking this new property, we're turning it into an RTS game, and they didn't feel comfortable with it, though it was a lot of fun. But like this one, they know what they were making, and everything feels is so much smoother. The gameplay, the cinematics, the the new classes you can play with. Granted, I haven't gotten to the beat of the game yet, but just like from the first level, like there's a lot of stuff that it feels like I'm playing Age of Empires with Halo,
So I got one question for you. Where's the beef of the game? You just mentioned you weren't there yet, so.
I imagine it's further on.
Where's the beef, Josh?
Where is the beef?
That's what I'm talking about. I heard that they used Blur for the cinematics.
Yes.
Company. And people say they got, what was it, 80 minutes of cinematics?
There's a lot of cinematics on there.
Some people, we're estimating that Blur charges almost $1 million a minute.
I mean,
well, if this was Tales Wars,
yeah.
It would be Skinematics.
Skinematics. Yeah.
But yeah, that's...
Have you played anything else? Just 15 in Halo Wars 2?
Just 15 Halo Wars 2.
Do you want to tell you guys what I've been playing?
Yeah.
I've been touching a whole lot
choice?
Of things, okay? Donna, you love it.
I'm gonna act like that I don't care the whole time. It's just my new character trying it out.
We're gonna cut that out so nobody knows what he just said. So just do a real quick reverse blip noise on that.
Gotcha.
Okay.
I would like you to bleep my name though.
Bleep my name.
There'll be a little title box that says Donna.
But yes. We're giving you guys inside baseball right now. I hope you appreciate it. I hope you love it. I've been touching a lot of stuff. I've been playing a little bit of Deus Ex, Mankind Divided. I only played about 5 minutes of the game, but I watched.
Do you like that game? Okay, well, I love the last one.
Human Revolution?
Human Revolution, I loved it, but it took me so long to get into it. And then I jumped into this one, and while everything looks cool, it's really difficult.
I honestly just was like, hey, I own this game, I should turn it on. So I got to the front part, and it looks really cool. And that's where I was like, oh man, I should try something else. Because I watched the 12-minute video review of the last game. So I was like, I'm going to put 25 or 30 minutes into this. I'll just...
It's like one of those games where it's fun, but you have to have a lot of patience to play it.
Well, I was chose my Trank sniper rifle, so I'm going Trank rifle. Then I also tried a little bit of Just Cause 3. Have you guys ever played Just Cause game?
No.
It's like a poor man's Grand Theft Auto, but it is a lot of fun. It's my biggest problems, which a lot of people have, it's a very old game, 2015, I believe, is the loading times are ridiculous, upwards of, you know, a minute and a half to 3 minutes. So you just get really bored watching loading screens, and they load quite a bit. And the story's not very compelling, but, I mean, it's an interesting game. You have a grapple hook. That's the one of the games where that started the grapple hook trend.
I'm sold.
I mean, I want you guys all to rush out and buy this game. Everybody I'm talking to right now, buy 10 copies just on the street.
I'm going to go to GameStop and be like, I heard this game has grappling hooks.
Grappling hooks are what
they ever heard what you said, then I'm going to be like, I'll take 3 of them.
I mean, we all love them, man. We love grappling hooks. I also have just been finishing up Watch Dogs 2, and by finishing up, I mean I'm halfway through it, and probably nowhere near the end, and I don't know if I'll beat it. And then I did play another 20 minutes of Mass Effect 3. So I've touched a lot of things and dabbled here and there, but I haven't really sat down and played anything really in depth. Just like you don't, and you don't play anything in depth, ever. Okay. What have you been playing?
Speaking of grappling hook, I did buy that move for my warrior in Dragon Age.
A grappling hook move. He pulls guys, right?
Yeah.
First move I bought in the game, man. You gotta get that quick.
Nah, it's not that useful.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah, they had a move, I think, they had, if you were playing, a DPS warrior in the last Dragon Age, I think you had, a jump into the fray kind of move where you could, instead of, pulling a guy to you, you could, jump forward and do, a heavy attack.
They don't have that in this one?
I think rogues have something like that, but not... I can't find a warrior move.
I need to go back.
The problem with specking in Dragon Age that I find is that it's almost more useful for your AI, but your AI is not very good, but your AI characters can use moves that they don't have mapped.
Yeah.
But when you're playing on a console, you're limited by how many moves you can map to
your... Isn't it right trigger or left trigger brings an extra set of moves though, or something like that? Or?
Not left trigger, because right trigger is just attack.
And then, attack.
Okay. Yeah, and then left trigger brings up your move palette and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And then, it's not too limited, but it becomes a thing where, I think, and maybe I'm... Maybe I should think about this, because I think there's certain, when you buy moves, you get stats with them, so maybe that makes up for the difference of not being able to use tons of moves all the time.
Yeah, it's... a lot of games have that problem. But real quick to reiterate, Donna over here is playing Dragon Age.
Inquisition.
Again. How close are you finishing it?
I don't think I'm very close. The one thing I want to constantly stress is that games need to be smaller.
Make your games smaller, guys.
The games industry will continue to suffer when everyone's going for making 100-plus-hour games. Even when they're great, Dragon Age, I think, is a great game. It's not a Ubisoft game, so...
Yeah. Let's talk about that for a second. Do you think that it's because there's a lot of unnecessary side quests? I've played games that are full of side quests that not only do they not give you any trophies or achievements, but they don't add anything to the story. It's like, here, why don't you go...
It's to the detriment of the overall game experience, and for the most part, games are in a weird spot because they're like a weird mix between an entertainment product and an artistic endeavor.
Yeah.
So there's a weird thing where it's a great game to me is a game like Bastion, which is really short.
Cool.
But it's such an artistically and aesthetically cohesive experience, they could have added maybe more systems to the game, but there's still quite a few, and at no point to me it's like a perfectly satisfying game. Not to say it's a perfect game, but because perfect is an unrealistic standard, it is a perfect game. Same with a game like Super Mario 3D Land on 3DS.
Yeah, that game was so much fun.
That game is so good. And it's got it mixes a whole bunch of different styles of Mario. It you're totally in the whole weird like drug trippiness of the Mushroom Kingdom. Like, it's there. And then even like on a larger game, like a game that I think is amazing is Lost Odyssey.
Lost Odyssey is good.
From Mistwalker. And that whole game, I mean, it has the same, it keeps true to its like aesthetic nature. It's like kind of like wanderiness. It's like, you know, like it's the one game where you play a amnesiac protagonist that I don't hate.
Well, back in the day, that used to not be something anybody hated because it was fairly new, but now it's like
used. Yeah, but it's also like a unique take on it because the guy's immortal, but an amnesiac. So it's like, that's like a really interesting thought.
And the combat.
But like the whole game has this somber, reflective feel to it. And the music, and the art direction, the places you go, and the story, the way the story develops. And it's not that long of a game. I think it's like a 50-hour game, 60-hour maybe if you're thorough. I think that's what it took me when I beat it the first time.
It's like 4 discs though, right?
Yeah, it's 4 discs. But that's just...
A lot of stuff happens.
Yeah.
It just eats up a lot of space on the disc.
But, you know, it's the same with like Dark Souls 1, 2. Like, that's like an aesthetically cohesive experience. Like the whole game has got that feel, and there's not like... There's a lot to do, but... You can be enthralled in the whole experience the whole time, or enthralled with the whole experience the whole time. Whereas like a game like Assassin's Creed, or at least the newer Assassin's Creed, where there's so much to do, at some point it switches from being this like, whoa, I'm this cool assassin, I'm scaling buildings, I'm like looking at everything, to like, I gotta do all this stuff now.
Yeah.
So it's like, that, and it's a thing, and I think they do it because there's like pressure to have like, oh, like there's the whole market, like, you know, like you see every like annoying commenter on every video game website, like, I'm not paying $60 for a 20-hour game. It's like, that mentality is so off base, I think, in a lot of ways, and it keeps people from making games that like are fully envisioned experiences, because they have a vision for what they want to do, and then they have all the stuff that they have to do because of pressures from their publisher company, because they're under EA or something, or, you know, like BioWare, where it's we gotta add all this stuff to the game, or we gotta rush this game out.
They have a multiplayer in that game I never touched, ever, and I don't think I ever will. Dragon Age multiplayer, I don't even know why they added it, but...
I would never play it, because...
Yeah.
I want to be in my single player RPG experience. Like, I don't.
Well, it's kind of like Mass Effect. It was a fun multiplayer. I didn't need it. I mean, you would have sold just as many copies of the game without the multiplayer.
But I think a lot of companies are scared. But to talk about what, or to speak on what Donna was saying, is the open world aspect of games. I do like that games are doing open world, but that being said, that we just need smaller open spaces.
Yeah,
like, I like the idea of traveling.
The two trains of thought, though, that I'm getting at is that, one, games that make themselves bigger on purpose, or not on purpose, not make themselves bigger just for the sake of making themselves bigger, it's fluff, and it takes away from the artistic side of a game's experience. You know, like a game like Undertale, like, it's not a fluff game, it's not that long either. But same with a game like Bastion, like I mentioned earlier. Like imagine if, like, you know, Bastion was under EA and was like, oh, well, you've got to have a multiplayer component, and you have to have an open world area. These would be more side quests, all this kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, we want to take people on this specific type of experience. Or a game like Journey.
Yeah, Journey was great.
Journey's great, and it's like, what,
two hours?
Yeah.
Sat down one night, played the whole thing, and it's
imagine if a game like Journey fell victim to the syndrome that every big company is pushing.
Needed.
So it's like,
there's like more towers.
There's that side of it, and then there's just the side that, like, for every game that comes out that's like competing for game length and size and like money to hours like ratio, like, that's one less game that I'm gonna play. And it's because I just don't have time. Like, I've got time to play Dragon Age Inquisition, but I'm not gonna play like the next open world Assassin's Creed game. Like,
do you think that's why people are going, so many people like the indie developers, because those games are significantly shorter than all these AAA games?
I think it's
not just significantly shorter, but people appreciate like a cohesive artistic vision. Like, whether or not they even think games are art or whatever, like, people respond to like good, cohesive, coherent things. And not that indie games are perfect or anything, but when a game, like, I played through Dust a couple years ago, the game.
I never actually played the Xbox game where it was like Create the World.
Dust.
Dust the Elysian Tale.
Dust the Elysian Tale.
Yeah, that's not that game.
Yeah, Dust Elysian Tale. I think it was made by one dude.
Yeah,
right?
One dude.
And it looks cool. Kind of like a weird Disney cartoon. Yeah. It's like a Urabasa kind of like vanillaware kind of game. And it's not amazing. The story is a little cheesy at times.
It's fun.
But it's fun.
Yeah.
And I beat the whole thing, and it was like you could tell that one guy had like an idea and brought it to fruition, as opposed to like a bunch of people got involved and then it was like all over the place and it had a bunch of different ideas. Like there's something about a like single vision being developed to its fullest potential. Even if it's not perfect in the end, I think that there's just like a responsiveness to that.
It's pure. It's you don't have like interference. It's like the scale down syndrome. You don't have like all these people putting ideas into something, or Kingdom Hearts, you know, it's...
Yeah, but see, there is a flip side, because my intuition on the scale-bound side is to think that whatever the guy had made up to that point was probably a disaster.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he had a real vision. My guess is Xbox was just like, hey, make us a platinum game.
I mean, because a company like Microsoft, too, that is like, feels like they have to constantly fight for approval.
Yeah.
Like, I think they knew how much bad press would go with the decision to cancel Scalebound.
Yeah, they had to do that.
So they probably, so that is probably representative of, like, where that game, like, what state that game was in.
It's just an interesting place we're in. I feel like a lot of companies are, I mean, the opposite of 15, unwilling to cut stuff out of their games. Like,
well, because it becomes like it constantly adding syndrome.
That's the
other side of having like a one person's artistic vision.
Yeah.
Is if no one's telling him no, you know, it's like we get the Star Wars prequels. Like, and it's like that kind of side has to it too, where it's like, I'm sure that guy for Scalebound had an idea and a vision, and then he realized that he was getting to make his dream game. He was like, oh, I'm gonna add this and this and this and this and this and this.
Yeah,
and then no one was just saying no. And at some point your vision becomes blurred anyway. So it's like,
it's a hard thing that as none of us are developers, it's really hard to say, but because games cost so much money to make, I think a lot of people don't want to like cut, because they're like, hey, we spent money on this. So instead of taking towers out of games, we already spent money making the models and the code that works for these towers. Let's put more towers into the game.
Yeah.
And games are becoming bigger and bigger services that are just, it's just changing the game landscape. And
the problem with that, like games as a service, like mentality, is that there's just not enough people and time in existence for all of the games.
But people so don't. Like, the problem is the bigger companies that are getting lion's share don't care. Like the Blizzards, who only make one or two games a year, they don't care.
One or two games a decade.
Yeah.
That's their thing.
Yeah, not even one or two games a year. Sorry, one game a year at most. They don't care if nobody ever plays Mass Effect, or they don't actually care plays Call of Duty, which they're owned by the same parent company.
Yeah, right. They want to keep gamers playing their product as long as possible.
And it's something we're going to talk about today in the news, because this is actually, there's some games that come out that kind of deal with the same problem, and there's some things that are changing in terms of like how many products we're seeing, you know?
Speaking of that, the other game that I've been playing this week a little bit is Pure Solar.
Oh yeah, I never got to that. That's it would be perfect if we had time to touch this old Genesis that we got.
I think that I regret getting it on the Wii U.
Yeah.
Because the game asks you to use the gamepad.
Okay.
And I don't want to use the game. See, the only issue that I really have with the Wii U gamepad, because I actually think it's really nice.
Yeah, it's pretty good control.
The main thing I have is that so many games, like even when you're using the virtual console, they have the game on the TV screen.
And on their and target. It's distracting.
It's distracting to like watch the TV when it's right here.
I can't do that.
So, okay, but here's the thing. You can turn it off. In this, like, you can turn the display off, like, you can do that option. Like, if you're playing a game, you're like, I don't want to use the screen, so I'm watching on TV. You can go, like, into the menu and just turn the display off.
Oh, nice, okay.
Okay, so, here's where it breaks down for Pure Solar. I should do some Game Facts search for some. I'm sure someone, of all places, Game Facts has to have a Pure Solar thread somewhere, so. But there's this thing you get called the Lhasa screen, and you access it by using the touch panel on the Wii U gamepad. And when you turn off the Wii U gamepad, I can't find a way to map buttons anywhere in Pure Solar to like assign it to a button. And you don't use every button, so you should be able to do it.
Yeah.
But I keep getting this notification popping up saying, touch the screen to use the Lhasa screen. And I'm like, I want to blow this up. And the game feels super janky, like, not janky in a glitchy way, but more like, it's got that weird thing where you can only move in four directions. You can't move like side to side. But the controllers, like the directional buttons are uber sensitive. So
it doesn't let you do the...
Yeah, so it just like feels a little like weird. But
I do not miss four directional games.
But here's the thing. I helped kickstart that game. Yeah, so I feel like the need to play through it.
You're obligated to play.
Yeah, but I might actually rebuy it on like Xbox or Vita or something. Vita would probably be the best place to play it.
Yeah, I wonder if it was cross-buy. If you got on Vita, you also have a PS4.
No idea.
Well, I have no clue.
Do you know what Pure Solar is?
No.
So Pure Solar is it's a French RPG. I'm pretty sure it's French.
Yeah, it's not
French or French Canadian.
I think it's from France. Watermelon is the name of the group.
And it's they made it for Sega. Like Genesis.
Sega Genesis, the original.
Oh, geez.
Or Sega Master System, whatever. They made it like in the 2000s or something.
Yeah, they sold some copies.
They did it on purpose. They did it on purpose, And it was like a love letter to RPGs, as they called it. And it's like, you know, they literally made a game for Sega Genesis, with the cartridge and everything. And then they ran a Kickstarter campaign to port it to consoles, like consoles that you
modern consoles
that you can use more modern. And we funded that
because
we're RPG fans.
It was like an old school JRPG done today, which you don't see very often.
Yeah, and I funded it at a tier to like get a physical soundtrack because I am a huge fan of video games.
That was pretty good, right?
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's got some. It's like every like RPG soundtrack. It's got some really cool tunes, some really dorky tunes. I think at that time I was in the middle of like studying composition at school, and so I would like listen to certain bits. I'm like, this was written bad, but being
hard to take yourself out of it,
college student. but it's a fun soundtrack, and I like the game's aesthetics and stuff. But there's it's hard to get anywhere. One, because I've been playing it late at night, and my intuition. See, the game I've played the most on my Wii U, besides maybe Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, which is amazing, is Dr. Mario. Because I'm a pretty big Dr. Mario fan.
Dr. Luigi, isn't that now?
I've never played that one.
Oh my gosh.
It's good, man. It's like a pretty good version of Tetris.
Okay. It's the best. And I had a friend that was, that she used to play it like a lot as a kid. So when we'd hang out, we'd play Dr. Mario. My friend's not a gamer person at all. She's so freaking good at Dr. Mario. Yeah. Like, I used to practice just to try to beat her.
Because you can play side by side, right?
Yeah, you can play side by side. Dr. Mario was super fun. I freaking love that game. But so I'll like go, like, I'll play a few rounds of Dr. Mario here. Because like when you first start playing after a long time, you're bad at it.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, oh, I want to get my skill back. And then you work, and you're like, okay. And then you kind of get into it. But yeah, with Pure Solar, it's like certain little things are, like, I haven't even gotten to a single fight yet. Because
the story opening's pretty long.
It's really not that long, but it's like, it's not that engaging.
Yeah.
And so it's like, hey, we have to go to this cave and find something for your sick dad, which is fine. Like, okay. But then it's like, you go into the forest and you're like, hey, we shouldn't be here yet. We have to go get weapons and talk to this guy in the lab. So I went and bought weapons at the store and talk to this guy at the lab, and he joins your party, and that's where you get this stupid robot screen that's touch screen only.
That's weird that they do that.
Yeah, I think that it was just an oversight where it's like, you know, where you're like, the last thing you think about is like, oh, wait a minute, can you map buttons though? Like,
because it was originally designed for like cartridge, they wouldn't have taken in mind that would be on a separate screen.
Right? It's so annoying. And I need to look, maybe it's something that you don't have to use at all.
Yeah, because I mean, it's on Xbox, on all those other consoles. A lot of them don't have touchscreen than a Vita, and Wii U does. Yeah. But
anyway, I go buy weapons, get this guy from the lab, and then I go back to the forest. It's like, hey, silly, we have to go talk to this guy in his lab and buy weapons still. Or you can go get weapons. And I'm like, wait a minute. I've done this. And the reason why I did that is because you have to go to the girl's house and go to the chest in her room and get her weapon. And then, but it's just funny, like the little things where it's like, how hard would it have been to code a line of text where it's like, oh, hey, it's good that we got this guy from the lab, but we still need to get my weapon. Like,
yeah, it's just old agent stuff, but we actually need to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about more agent stuff. Maybe not. Ba-doosh.
If you're tired of sifting through flea markets for rare and unique games, we can help. Retro City Games in Henderson, Nevada, only 5 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip, has all your favorite gaming staples, classics, and a wide selection of rare games with new stuff always appearing on our shelves. Come in and chat with Nicole or Doug about your love of games and watch as they help you complete your collection or find your childhood favorite. And don't forget, Retro City Games loves trade-ins. So if you have any Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, Xbox, PlayStation, or even PC games, come in and visit Retro City Games today. Welcome to the new metropolis of gaming, Retro City Games.
We are back, and in the first half we talked a lot about games that were bloated and had a lot of open world conventions like Towers. I want to bring out a game that comes out next Tuesday called Horizon Zero Dawn. It is, no, all the reviews that Margo just did this week. None of us have had a chance to play it, but from what I understand, they do something interesting that I want to bring out just because we were talking about Assassin's Creed and all those games, where they have that bloat in the game where they have the extra things you want, but they do it in a subtle way where instead of like 12 or 20 towers, there are 4 towers. And instead of like 16 bandit camps, there are like 4 or 5 bandit camps.
But when you say bandit camps, are you referring to Borderlands?
I'm referring to Far Cry. If anybody checked out any of the reviews and the game like previews, the game is essentially a Far Cry game. So
looks beautiful.
Yeah, it's supposed to be great. It's a Far Cry game, take it or leave it. It's not gonna be the game that sets the world on fire. I felt like similar to No Man's Sky, a lot of people are expecting it to change everything, but in all honesty, it is just a really good open world game. But I just wanna say that's something I'm looking forward to, and that's something that what we're talking about, they are trying to change that. So I just wanna bring that up real quick. But other news that we found out this week was from Square Enix.
I just want to say, I think Horizon looks awesome, yeah. Character design looks cool, too. I like the main...
Aloy, yeah, she's cool. It's a cool game. I'm always skeptical from the creators, Guerrilla Games, because the only other games they made were Killzone, and I did not like Killzone. Like, it wasn't fun. I bought one of them. I sold it.
It sounds to me like they've learned from their past mistakes. So.
Yeah.
And I think the best part about Killzone the game was the real-life game that went with it of... Sony fanboys trying to convince everyone that it was awesome.
Yeah. That's
like the metagame of Killzone.
Yeah. Oh man, remember when Killzone was supposed to be the Halo killer? I remember all the Game Informers, Sony has its Halo killer.
I think I was still like a Sony fanboy when I heard that too, but I just wasn't interested.
Well, I played the demo. Back then we always got those demo CDs, and it was like, you play it and you're like, this isn't fun. How is this going to be a Halo killer? But anyways, we got some cool news from Square Enix, or interesting news, I guess, from Square Enix.
Let me just pull this up here because I'm going to butcher the name. Their newly started studio, Isatola.
Okay, that's a weird name.
Yeah, or I think that's right. Let's see.
I know the name of the guy, but I don't know the name of the studio.
And it's called, the name of the guy, Hideo Baba.
Hideo Baba, which means
he's like a former Tales producer. But actually, look this guy's track record up, and he's not a designer or anything. He's produced some Tales games, and then he's brand manager on some Tales games. But he also was a producer or something on Blue Dragon Awakened Shadow, which is a Mistwalker game that's awesome.
Blue Dragon was fun.
Blue Dragon's great, but this is like a 3DS or DS game. Yeah. It's like a hack and slash. Hubtown,
this one,
Bottomless Dungeon,
this previous one. This was, they came out with 2 Blue Dragon DS games after the original Blue Dragon on Xbox.
One's a strategy game, and the other one's like an action RPG.
Okay.
Action RPG is actually pretty dang great. It's fun. I mean, it's the same as every action RPG. You've got your Hubtown, you go fight harder monsters for more and more gear. But, I mean, that's the kind of thing. It's like the same as an MMO. At the end of the day, you're playing it based on the aesthetic of the game because it's all the same. It's all just basically a dress-up simulator with fighting. So yeah. It's like...
Do you like what you're
doing? Blue Dragon's a cool world, so it's a fun game. But so... this guy, it's called, Project Prelude Rune.
Of course.
Yeah, okay. But it's a new RPG.
Why do they always have those like long, unpronounceable names? It's like listening to an emo band, you know, they have these like sentence long song names. I don't know.
Prelude, man, to Rain.
So my guess is that the game is going to be called Rune Prelude.
Rune Prelude colon birth, rebirth, sleep.
Anyway, so the concept art looks cool. It's got this elvish looking gal petting a dragon. There's some cool looking cities, lots of dragons and things like that.
Will there be dragons?
It seems like there's gonna be dragons.
That is a solid point here. We are dragons.
Now, it's probably a long time out because it's apparently the studio is still hiring designers and programmers and stuff. But I'm optimistic because I like the concept art, and you know, like I like one-off RPGs that Square makes. Like, that's something I miss. You know, Square used to do a lot more. It seems like they did a lot more, like, experimental projects. They seem to be getting back to that trend now. They have their, like, Bravely Default series. They have, like, I Am Setsuna and that kind of stuff. Where they're doing more than just their big brands. But the thing that makes me apprehensive is they haven't announced a platform, which makes me think we're just going to get another crappy mobile game.
Everybody loves mobile games, okay? That's something we talk about much.
Think that's like because it's safe? They think it's safe that they do.
Japan's market is all about mobile games. Yeah. The PS4 didn't. I mean, it sold well, better than Xbox, obviously, over there. Yeah. But it's still not selling like the 3DS, or I think even the Vita has beaten it somewhat.
But see, if they were making another handheld game, I'd buy it day one. Even this guy's from Tails. But but if it's a mobile game, I'll never play it. It's just, I might download it if it's free, but I'm sure it will be one of those things where you have like a weird intro, and then you get to a menu screen with like, here's your green orbs, and they're for getting more characters, and then here's your red orbs, which cost you real money, but they're better than green orbs. And then your red-green orbs, and it's like...
You get those by spending your green orbs to buy red orbs, and they're only mixed orbs, because they can't be as good as the one you spend real money on.
By the way, reading this tutorial costs you $2.99. Build to your iTunes.
So, speaking of less frustrating games, we know the platforms of Mass Effect Andromeda is coming out next month, and there's something really awesome. Came out, or is it pre-releasing?
Yeah, well, it's out now. You can buy it.
It won't ship yet.
It won't ship yet, but you can pre-order it. But it's an expansion for Cards Against Humanity. And so, if you guys
for families,
a game for families, play with your kids. But if you play Cards Against Humanity, you know that there's a lot of like.
Clean jokes.
Yeah, there's a lot of adult humor, so it makes me wonder, like, what is going to happen with Mass Effect? Are they going to be, like, making cards about Krogan junk, or is it, like, what's going on here?
To be fair, there's only 14 cards.
It's going to change the world.
With only 14 cards, though, they have to do something funny. It has to be hilarious.
But disclaimer, I bought two copies of it, or pre-ordered two copies of it, so I get 28 cards.
Yes!
28 new cards, that's how it works.
What makes me laugh, though, is the people at BioWare are constantly active on social media, and just the things that they say are funny. Because right here, Connell Pierce, their community manager, said, rest assured there's more than just jokes about kissing aliens in this pack. There are also cards about getting to second, even third base. Nice. I love reading those guys' tweets because they always say the funniest, most random.
Is that the BioWare guys though, or the guys who made
the
expansion?
No, that's the BioWare guys.
Oh, okay.
And the guys who made the expansion said we agreed to do this because Mass Effect is the only good AAA game out there. False. We thought that if we made this pack of cards, they'd let us play Andromeda early. Unfortunately, that did not happen.
Well, go check it out on totallyeffablealiens.com.
Yeah,
let's bleep out the effable. Anyways. That was all kind of a prelude to what we really wanted to talk about today.
Project Prelude.
Which, speaking of Project Prelude, it could be coming out to this console. We never know, and I don't have a lot of hope for it that it will. But the Nintendo Switch is coming out a week from tomorrow. And we got some news about today. Some really awesome news everybody wants to hear. They have no plans for virtual console at launch, and they will tell people about it at a later date.
Wait. So what's the awesome part?
awesome part is that we don't get any games. There's only Zelda coming out, and there's no virtual console.
Yeah.
That's actually me just being...
this is what sarcasm sounds like. This is sarcasm.
There are a few games coming out, but I think, I know personally, I'm really disappointed that Nintendo has not mentioned the virtual console at all, and then just decided to say, oh, hey, we're delaying it on a system that already seems to only have, I think they brought their total up to 10 games, and only two or three of those are retail games.
So the moral of the story here is that Nintendo jumped the gun on their Switch release.
No, the moral of the story is they're doing perfect. Yeah. They're the best company ever. They never made a mistake. They only make gold, and don't ever listen to anybody who says different, Josh.
I think everyone, must be like astounded at this point, where it's like, how do you continually release severely underpowered consoles, which is not philosophically wrong, but on top of that, have nothing to go with it. So it's like, the virtual console is the biggest no-brainer of all time.
Yeah.
I think pretty much everyone, like, no one disagrees that has, like, rational thinking where it's like, oh yeah, virtual console, that makes sense. And it's like, every generation, they refuse to do it. And they refuse to do it, or they, like, say they'll do it and do it well. I'm pretty sure, like, when they say there's no virtual console at launch, there is a 1% chance that means they're planning something really kick-ass and they're like gonna reveal it.
Hopefully.
But what it probably means is that when they came up with the Switch, they're like, this is so good. People are finally gonna stop asking for a virtual console. They're gonna be so sold on our new console that they're gonna stop asking us to like get into our old games and kind of stuff like that. And then when people start asking about it, they're like, oh, they're still asking about it. Well, we'll do something eventually. We'll release.
Do you think it's that, or do you think that Nintendo is just not being upfront with their fans about what they can expect from their products?
Well, that is it. But it's because they keep, I think it's because there's that bullheadedness where they keep thinking that they have something great and that people won't want anything else, but that's just not true.
I just think Nintendo is so far removed. Like you mentioned before, their board doesn't like video games. I don't think they know what the fans want, but the craziest thing to me is it's not like, they don't know what the fans want, but if you read articles, like before the reveal, tons of professional video game journalists and media talk about ways that the Switch can be the best console ever, have a virtual console that works at launch. I mean, people were asking
for... They give them a roadmap.
Yeah.
They give them an instruction kit.
Like, no!
Yeah. It's like they don't know what the internet is. They can just go on the internet and see what the fans want.
It's been proven they don't have a clue what the internet is. I'll be surprised.
Well,
if
but see, that's
works.
The thing. Is it like remember when Operation Rainfall or whatever happened? Like they heard that, and there's probably other factors, you know, behind just like that weird group. But they obviously are aware to some degree of.
They are, but...
The internet.
So Operation Rainfall and Mother 3, I can understand at least Nintendo being like, man, maybe there's not actually enough people who want these, because they're, you know, there's always like the loud fanboys. Things like Virtual Console, they probably have data that prove how well it's sold. Now, the problem is you can't use the Wii U data because two reasons. One, not that many people bought Wii U's. Second reason is they make you rebuy the games. So it's like some people are not going to buy them from them anyways because they force you to pay twice.
Right.
So, but at least about the Wii.
That's the weirdest thing too, because with the Wii U, you can load your Wii into it,
so then
you can go into your emulated Wii
and
play your Wii Virtual Console games.
But you can't do that with the Switch. Is that
well? No. Right now, we don't know anything. But what you're getting?
I'm talking about how stupid it is that you have to rebuy your Wii U Virtual Console games.
Oh, yeah, they don't just give them to you.
No, you had to pay like $1 to $2, just a small fee. But to like get them upgraded so that you can do a cool thing, so they can play them on the tablet and do the save. And hey, I was okay with that. If they told me on the Switch, if you want your old games, you have to pay $1 or $2
per game
upgrade. I would still say okay, I get them portable now because the Nintendo 3DS has a virtual console, but it's really limited. It's only Super Nintendo games and it only works on the new Nintendo 3DS.
Right.
So we still don't have ways to play like Super Mario 64 on the go or...
Well, Super Mario 64 DS.
Oh yeah, Super Mario 64 DS.
That's us, because the camera.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't have like a good way to play a lot of these games, you know? And there's still no way to play like Overbell 64 and a lot of their great games. So hey, you got a console style system that you are also making portable. Just give it, like, either do a Netflix thing, charge us monthly, and then allow us to download it, because you can't just have it running off Wi-Fi, because then it loses the portable aspect.
Yeah.
Or allow us to buy the games Honestly, I have a pre-order. I would have been happy to even rebuy the games at full value if I could have gotten it launched. But
if they could promise us that this would be the last
time
that we have to deal with their stupidity regarding their virtual console and all that stuff.
Yeah. This could be the last time they create a console. Like, this thing
we'll see. They have a lot of money, but they may not want to risk it again if this does tank. And we're gonna have to see. We all talked about it, and I think we all agree, like, this, they rushed this. There's no reason why the Nintendo Switch needs to come out March 3rd. Like, there's only the Zelda game, and they could have said, hey, we're waiting till summer.
Yeah.
At least put that and Splatoon 2 out together, and you got at least two games.
It's almost embarrassing. I mean, just like, it seems so obvious that you could think, like, okay, it's 2017, like, if they had put out a console as strong as the Xbox One or the PS4 Pro, like, it would be underpowered in a year anyway.
Yeah.
So
it's not even as powerful as those.
Right. So it's like, and I get it. Like, I never once played a Nintendo first party game on the Wii or the Wii U and had a single complaint about the graphics.
No, so they're great.
They're great games.
They use art to their advantage.
So know how to do all that. But virtual console business. It's like,
that seems to be like a huge selling point for them. That's what fans want. So you'd think that they'd be paying attention to, like.
That's why I got a Wii. Yeah. I remember seeing the videos for the Wii, and I remember being like, I want that because I love these old games. I don't want to drag out an N64 or Super Nintendo. The idea that I get to just play this game, it's awesome. And then it's like 3 years after the Wii comes out, then they have Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI or Final Fantasy III for Super Nintendo. The games that I wanted to play, but it's like, you made me wait 3 years to get these games? Like, Overkill 64 didn't even come out until 4 or 5 years in the Wii's life.
Yeah.
So it's like, are they going to make us do that again with the Switch, where they just release one or two games at a time until they stop? Like, I just don't know what they're doing, and I don't know if they know what they're doing.
I wonder if we should appeal directly to their board of directors, because, or their board or whatever, because those are the people that hate games but want their money.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you're listening, Japanese board of directors, like,
if you're one of those 80 people,
if you want your money, tell them to give us the virtual console.
Yeah, just,
it's kind of like, it's a double-edged sword though, because you can't, people aren't just going to stop buying Nintendo. It's
I think the Wii U showed that people will stop buying the consoles. A lot of people are hoping that Nintendo will fail enough that we'll get those games on our Xboxes and PlayStation 4s.
Do you think that they notice this directly though? Like,
they're
completely oblivious to like what could fix their financial problems.
It doesn't even matter if they have financial problems because they're generating so much bad will that it will eventually like turn on them. I mean, it's the same thing. Like,
Sony's doing it too. A lot of Japanese companies, they, like the guy at Sony when he created, he's like, I don't even know why people are buying the console this much, because they, at the time when it released, didn't have any good first party games. Finally, in 2017, that system came out in 2013. They are finally now getting their first party more. They had Uncharted last year and like Bloodborne in 2015, but before that they just had like one or two decent games a year. And now they're getting their first party in order, and now people have a reason to buy it. But people are just, there's 55 million PS4s sold. Like, nobody knows why. Nobody has a clue why. Like,
people,
it's
just like to own things.
So, and it's cool, but Nintendo didn't get that with the Wii U. And I don't think everybody's gonna be like, hey.
Yeah, because so for gamers, like, gamers are constantly more and more wary of Nintendo because they keep making so many mistakes. So many easily, like, bottom line things where it's like, okay, let's make it graphically competitive so we can get third parties. Let's have a virtual console. Like, let's have like a well thought out like online system, like all that stuff. And they just, nah.
Because the casuals.
But what I was gonna say is that the casuals that bought the Wii, like the grandmas and stuff like that, like, and then like the casual gamers that are like our generation, like everyone that's like, you know, in their mid 20s to like early 30s or whatever, they grew up when Super Nintendo was cool or Mega Nintendo was cool. Like, if they're gonna buy video games for their kids, they'll buy Nintendo. So they're like, oh, I'm not really a gamer, but I remember Nintendo being cool when I was a kid. But then as soon as that generation gets older, you know, like, it stops buying. Like, once that ends, like, that's their market, is that casual market, in a sense, where, like, the people that, like, you know, the gamers that have kids probably aren't going to be as optimistic to buy their kids Nintendo because it's...
Yeah, because there's been no good reason. And what I was thinking about with the casual market too is like, the PlayStation 4 got a lot of casual market because it was just, at the time, it was $100 cheaper, and it still had the Call of Duties and all those games.
And also, it had the press on its side.
Yeah.
Like the, I mean, it goes a long way. I remember when I was in 8th grade, trying to buy a GameCube at Best Buy, and the guy was trying to convince me to buy an Xbox instead.
Yeah, they pressed. Well, it was the first US-made console, and everybody was so excited.
Well, it wasn't a letdown, though.
I liked it, but I mean, the GameCube was great, too. All three of those consoles at the time all had really cool games.
But yeah, but what I was saying is that, like, I play video games, so I thought that guy was stupid. He's actually saying I should buy an Xbox or a PlayStation 2, whatever. Obviously, I own a PlayStation 2.
A lot of people were not.
And I was like, but I was saying, like, how many non-aware people will that kind of like stuff work on? Where someone's like, oh, you know, some mom just wants to buy something for a kid, and the guy can just like, hey, you know what? This is really not a well-made product, and there's not a lot of value in it. You should consider buying a PlayStation 4 instead. Like, that will work on tons of people that are not there.
And it will, as we've seen with Xbox, because a lot of people hated the idea of always on. Like, that follows a long time. I still met people 2 years after Xbox One came out that said, well, I want it, but I don't want to have my console always on the internet the whole time and not be able to buy physical games. I mean, you could see the physical games.
So, everyone just would rather have, like less space take up, everything's digital. Yeah. Like, Microsoft had the best idea, and everyone hated them for it, and then...
I get it. They were bullish about it at the time. They were, like, saying to people who were traveling, like, hey, don't buy it. But they have done so much ground on that, whereas, like, Nintendo, they're going to now have to make up a lot of ground, and will it change things? Will we see the people, you know, that they're, like, not helping right now, still watch all the news to see when they're...
This will help tell. I mean, this will help tell if they even care about their customer base at all.
Yeah, well, we'll see, man. I think this E3, if they don't have, like, the best E3 going for them, the Switch is going to be in trouble because consoles don't... I mean, yeah, Xbox One did turn things around to where they started getting more in sales because they lowered the price and made good games, but it's rare that a console starts bad and then just skyrockets.
Yeah.
Like, consoles normally have to start okay, and then they can get better. But, like, I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, well, Nintendo's... The strongest thing they had when they revealed the Switch was mystery. They had an interesting commercial, and people were excited. Yeah. But now that more and more is no longer mysterious, and then all the actual news is disappointing.
Yeah.
You know.
The mysteriousness worked against them because the problem was like all the rumors were coming out. We'd get all the good Wii U games as ports. We'd get there was supposed to be a Mario and a Zelda at launch. Like, they should have stopped. The second those rumors came out and they knew they weren't true, they should have instantly been like, this is not true. Because I know for me personally, like, GameCube Virtual Console, they announced that. Somebody made that rumor in December or January, and it was like on every news source. GameCube Virtual Console is coming out probably with the launch of the system. With Sunshine, Double Dash, and a bunch of other good games.
It's like rumors and speculation help them sell product, though. I mean,
it's not going to help now because if people actually look into it.
Yeah, but I mean, by the time, like, all these people are like, well, you think they're like, well, maybe now that I already have a pre-order, I should just go ahead and pick it up. Like,
but there's people that will cancel their pre-order also.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just do what I may do, which is just sell it because there are going to be some people who want to get it for their kids. Like we talked about, Nintendo is still a good console for that, or a good company for that, but I don't know how many people.
But is there ever anything like this with Xbox or PlayStation where people, like, the console's coming out and they just don't know certain things?
I don't feel like that's true, right?
So I think that people kind of know that Xbox and Sony are kind of just going to do whatever they want. And that's
right, but I mean, I feel like it's like, you know, like, okay, I'm getting a game console, and I know these games are coming out, and I know these features are there, and I know there's stuff that's coming. Is there ever this, like, oh, I have this thing pre-ordered, and I don't know what's going to happen with it? Like,
they don't care if they disappoint you.
It's funny too, though, because Nintendo never has this problem with their handheld devices. It's like, oh, 3DS is coming out. I'll buy that.
Yeah, and well, the 3DS had some issues originally. They sold it for $300 or $400.
Oh, yeah.
They had to give people... The craziest thing, and we can't talk about this long, but when the 3DS came out, it was such a disaster because they sold for overpriced that they released Game Boy Advance games for all the people who bought it at the beginning, and you can't buy those games. Like, I've been wanting to buy those games forever. It was 10 Game Boy Advance games. It was like Zelda Minish Cap and a whole bunch of other great games. I was like, man, I would love to buy those. They must release those at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It's never, the 3DS is 5-6 years old, and those are still just for the people who bought the 3DS early, which I guess is cool for them, but still another move where it's like, you can do this, you don't want to make money, like, I would have rebought those games.
Yeah.
But we need to take a real quick break, and we have one last short topic to cover.
Check out the number 2 show on the Podcast Radio Network this Monday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, and later that night, it'll be available for download on the ESO, Tangent Bound, and Gunna Geek Networks, and also iTunes, Google Play, Mixcloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Podcast.com. Thanks so much, and we truly appreciate you listening. This is the Pop Culture Cosmos.
We're back to talk about one last topic. Last week we talked about PewDiePie and his racism and YouTube.
Oh, we're talking about the backstabbing thing?
Yeah.
Where people are like saying they're friends with him and...
Oh, that thing.
Like, they're like, hey, I don't, like, he's not really racist, but he just did something stupid and I don't agree with his actions, but I'm still his friend. And then people online are like, are bashing those people and saying, you're backstabbing him. And like,
vicious
dude, you know what I think it is? I think that because people have such sad lives and daytime TV is so bad now, this is their new soap opera.
Is the YouTuber
lives. The lives of YouTubers and like their interrelations with each other.
And that's actually what I want to talk about, not specifically that, but this YouTube personality, this Twitch personality, personalities and like their content that they're producing is starting to be actually detrimental to the health. Recently this week, there was a Twitch person who was on a 24-hour stream. Do you know his name?
Brian P-H-S-H-Y-P-R-I-D.
Not me.
Vignault.
Brian
Vignault.
Vignault, okay. Well, I hope you pronounce his name right, if not, you're an idiot. And I blame him. But anyways, Brian like passed away this week, which was really sad. He was, I think, 35, right?
He's 35.
And father of two children?
Father of two children. He was playing a 24-hour World of Tanks marathon to raise money for the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
That is a cool thing to me, but like one of the reasons why I want to end on this is we try to just, we enjoy doing this. We all do this for fun, something that we look forward to. And we try to do it short. We just try to do an hour and a half. And I think some of these people, because they're doing this for their whole life to make a living, they're starting to do stuff that isn't healthy because that's how they make more money. And I just want to get your guys' opinions on what do you think about this?
Do you think
this
world? It's the lack of movement that's causing people to just become unhealthy?
It's not just that. I think any time you stay up for 24 hours is not good. I know they do that.
Yeah, it's bad for your body. Sleep deprivation. He went out for a smoke break at like 3 in the morning, right? So,
because we don't know, people don't know like if he died of natural causes because there's detectives that are actually investigating it. Because when
he didn't die of stream then?
He didn't die like live on the stream. When his stream came back on, there was a detective using his account.
Oh, really?
Because a detective was trying to find out like what happened to this guy. So nobody really knows if he died of just natural causes or his body shut down or if somebody did something to him.
Well, there is at least a very good possibility that it was natural causes and his body shut down, because you always hear the stories of like the dude that checked himself into a computer lab in Korea or something and just died. Like, you know, I'm ready to die. I'm just going to play games until I'm dead. So there's probably something that happens. I mean, when you're sedentary, something that happens if you have bad habits of smoking cigarettes, drinking Mountain Dew, and eating Cheetos constantly while staying up for 24 hours.
Gamers.
I'm sure that all of, like, a combination of all of those things. Like, I've played games not for 24 hours, but I've played 8 hours of games in a day before, and I feel terrible. I do it.
You
have to get up and do something. Like, you can't.
And I think, I mean, that's the same. You know, maybe there's something that happens, like with, like visual, like maybe like the whole like concept of like that interaction. Maybe it does something that we're not aware of, because people sit down all day at their cubicle jobs, and you know, people don't die every day. Yeah. Obviously, that lifestyle is unhealthy because humans weren't, you know, made or evolved to do that, but...
Well, there's actually laws in place that nobody probably uses, because companies would probably fire you if you did use them, but you're supposed to take every
10-minute break every hour.
Yeah, something like that. It's bad to look your shit.
Yeah. So the bottom line is capitalism.
Yeah.
But no, because people like this guy, he's going to stream 24 hours because the whole point of streaming is to have more followers, and you have more followers by beating everyone else. It's like the same thing that Uber's doing, where their employees are paid nothing, and their rates are so low, these are going to undercut everyone.
Yeah,
it's just like that, and it's the same thing with like game development companies, movie like studios. It's like we have to have more products out there to beat the competition. It's all mentality. It's just everywhere.
It's weird that this happened when it did, because I had a conversation with someone. We were talking about how, like, the retirement programs are so filled with so much money because they businesses only expected people to live like 2 or 3 years after they retired because they would stop doing things. But then he brought a point up to me. He's like, so do you think with video games that our minds are going to be active, and so we're not going to basically, that's not going to be true because we're going to be, our minds will be active, and, you know, we'll get up to use the bathroom or whatever. But like, I think what this shows with this Twitcher is that that's not true. Like, even if we retire and we just sit there and play games all day, you're still, you know, your health is still an issue.
Yeah, I think anytime you do this type of stuff where you do 24-hour streams, even for good causes, you are risking something that there's no need to risk. Like Eric was mentioning, there's a race to the bottom in terms of like, hey, what is everybody gonna do to make a dollar that's unhealthy? And then for something like this where he's doing that for a good cause, which is great, the idea is it shouldn't be 24-hour streams. Nobody needs to watch him play games for 24 hours.
Oh yeah.
It could be a 12-hour stream. He would probably still be able to help his company. And or like a great example of these things done well is, what's good? Awesome Games Done Quick.
Yeah.
Awesome Games. AGDQ, right? And that's a 24-hour stream, but most people are actually only a part of it for an hour.
Yeah, like
hour two.
Switch, yeah.
And it's a great idea because they raise, I don't know if one of you guys want to bring up the total real quick before we head out, but they make millions and millions of dollars for Doctors Without Borders every year. And it's really cool. The people love it, and it's not one guy who's going to kill himself pretty much from doing this. So for me, this is just like a wasted life. A wasted life that a family and needs to suffer for.
Yeah, I hope all the charity money that he was earning by that stream just goes to his family.
Yeah, because they're going to need it. And, and it's just, I mean, there's no pension for Twitch streamers. There's no, you know, like, hopefully he had life insurance and hopefully his family gets that money because, yeah, it's a bummer. I don't think he intended to hurt his family this way. But it's just another good reminder of, like, while games are great, we don't need to put our bodies at risk just to make other people entertain their ass.
Yeah, games can be good and healthy in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Just like
eating
can be.
Stress.
If you eat for 24 hours straight, you will also die.
Yeah.
They've raised $10 million for Doctors Without Borders and the Prevent Cancer Foundation.
Yeah. Awesome Games Done Quick is a great example, and I feel like a lot of people don't want to do that because, like, well, let me just do my 24-hour stream and I'll make more money than the last 24-hour stream, and I'll be the best 24-hour streamer. Anyways, with that, we're going to all go and have a 24-hour stream each, so we look forward to having you guys watch us. I got all my Mountain Dew and Doritos and Cheetos at home, and I got my Taco Bell, so I'm ready to do this. What about you guys? You guys ready for your 24-hour streams?
I think I've eaten Taco Bell in 10 years.
Eat it every night.
It's the one
Blue Mountain Dew.
It's the one fast food. Taco Bell and Burger King are the only fast food restaurants that I ate as a child that I have not tried again as an adult.
Let me tell you. They're delicious. I actually have had them recently. We won't talk about that because this is not our but this is not that.
Taco Bell podcast.
Anyways, we're Super BS. See you next week.
Bum, bum, bam, bum, bum.
To us people that can feel things, it hurts.